Abate la rimette dentro, esce Radu, porta vuota. Gol! Gol! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero! Li abbiamo battuti tutti, Alessio! Grande Alessio! È bella la vita! Lava quella zolla, Alessio! Lava la quella zolla, Alessio!
Hello everybody and welcome to another edition of the Sempre Milan podcast. It's our first one of 2019. And I'm glad to be joined by Anthony Torgrud. AJ, introduce yourself.
What's up, guys? Glad to be back after the holidays. Had a nice long break there. You can find me on Twitter at Torgrud45. And we are also joined once again by our good friend Madison. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm excited that we are doing the podcast again. We did have a couple weeks off. You guys can find me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
Excellent stuff. How's 2019 going so far for you, gentlemen?
I mean, I don't know. It's only like my third week out here.
Yeah, I mean, I've got nothing new to report, so.
That's good. That's good. As long as things aren't going bad, then that's a start.
Government's still shut down, you know. Been good days.
We haven't had a government all year. We're kind of like Sweden.
We haven't had one for a while either.
Yeah. Yeah. So the world's in chaos, the usual.
Yeah, that's not bad. At least we've got football to fall back on.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, just before we jump into this, the show is, as always, brought to you by our friends over at UEFA Fantasy League. So if you haven't already, make sure to check out our Serie A Fantasy League, and you can find out more details about that on our Twitter page via our pinned tweet. So with all that bullshit out of the way, we'll start by mentioning the game that was first chronologically that we haven't recapped, and that was, of course, the 2-1 home win against Spal. It feels like ages ago now. It was the 29th of December. Basically, they went 1-0 up. We equalised pretty much straight away, and then Higuain scored a winner. We'll obviously come on to Higuain because he's the big topic at the moment, but... Yeah, Suso got a red card. I honestly don't really remember an awful lot about that game. I don't know about you guys. I was actually on the way back from Fulham. I went to watch Huddersfield play at Fulham, and we had quite a lot to drink that day. So I was watching the game on a dodgy stream on the train home, and I remember celebrating the winner. Yeah, I don't remember.
I just remember Higuain scored.
Yeah, I don't even remember that, honestly. I thought our last game was the one on the 26th of December. Don't even know who we played. I don't know. 2018's in the past.
This is the podcast for insight and analysis, isn't it?
Well, you know what, dude? You talked about a game that was like 4 weeks ago. A lot happened in 4 weeks.
It was 3 weeks ago. But yeah, that's a good point taken. So we'll move on. So we had a little bit of a break, which was good. And then on Saturday evening, we played at Sampdoria in the Cup. This was a game that I've only seen like the extended highlights of, but we got the job done in extra time. 2 goals from substitute Patrick Cutrone. Just nice to get in the hat for the next round.
Yeah, so that game was not that exciting until Cutrone came on and just changed it. And if you haven't seen his goals yet, do yourself a favor, go watch highlights on YouTube, find a 4K or something, and like watch it because they're incredible. Both of them, just beautiful volleys into the back of the net. It was pretty sweet. But it's cool getting her name in the hat, like you said. We played Napoli now, back-to-back, within 3 days. They pushed it. It was scheduled for the 30th, and now it's the 29th, which makes less sense because I think we play them in the league on the 26th, something like that, so... That's going to be a bummer, playing them back-to-back. And then if we get through there, then it's either Lazio or Juve again. So it's going to be a tough road in the cup for us. But like I said, it's cool always moving forward in there. And, you know, maybe we could keep going. It seems like every other year we make it to the final now. So
yeah, it's been our thing recently. Seems to be that, yeah, we always get to the final against Juve and unfortunately lose. It'd be nice to go one further this time, of course. But like you say, we've got quite a difficult path. Maddie, did you enjoy the game?
I enjoyed everything after the 90th minute.
Yeah.
Like AJ said, the first 90 minutes were just really boring to watch. Suso was out injured. It was Paqueta's first game playing, so he was an exciting player to watch. I think in the ratings, I was just like, it looks like he's just floating across the field with the ball at his feet. And it's been a long time since we've been able to see a Milan player play like that. I don't remember the last one who looked like they could just dribble that easily down the field. So I'm definitely excited to see what he can do with us. He played again this afternoon. When he's up to full fitness, I definitely think that he will, you know, be one of our strongest midfielders. But, I mean, after the 90th minute when Cutrone came on, the game immediately changed because you could just, you know, see the passion that he plays with. Compared to Higuain, who, in my opinion, just looks like a lazy player. The first half of the season, he looked like, you know, he had that energy, and then like his goal drought just completely ruined him. And Cutrone got two world-class volley goals in overtime and put us through the, what, quarterfinals now? Or are we on to the quarterfinals? Yeah. I'm not excited about facing Napoli, but all the teams in the quarterfinals are strong teams, so there's no one, you know, all of them are going to be a hard game. I'd like to face Inter because I think that was last year that we faced them in the semifinals, right? And that was fun, but...
I think we was Inter in the quarterfinals, and then okay. We played Lazio in the semifinals and won on penalties, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was when Romagnoli scored the winning penalty. That was incredible.
Yeah, back to Paqueta real quick though, you're absolutely right. The way he moves is fantastic. And one thing that's a little odd though is when we signed him, we signed him in like early December once Flamengo's season ended in Brazil, and he was supposed to be training with us that whole time so that he would be fully fit right now. Correct? Wasn't that like the
rumor? Yeah, but. I don't think he was because he came to Milan and then a few weeks later, they're like, Paqueta's due back in training on this date. I'm like, oh, I thought he was supposed to be training the past 2 weeks. Like, yeah. Where has he been?
I think it was what people assumed, but then didn't realize that there was probably some kind of regulation stopping him from training with us until the contract was like formally deposited.
Well, Remy used to train with us. And so did Boateng before their contracts.
Yeah, but I think we just all assumed he was going to be training. There was nothing officially released by the club saying
also,
he's going to be training.
Also, it was the end of the Brazilian season, like you've mentioned, so maybe he needed a month off just to recover a little bit more. I assume that, you know, we got him in as soon as we could, let's put it that way, because we've been wafer thin in terms of midfield depth. So
yeah, I mean, we've only had two games... this year, and he's played from the start in both of them, and so and heavy games, you know, a final and a quarterfinal. I mean, they're not your run of the mill starts unless you are a superstar. So he definitely had big shoes to fill immediately there, and I think he looked fantastic in both. In fact, I gave him the highest rating for the Super Cup today, mainly just out of hype. Honestly, I just like the way he moves and. It's just cool having someone that does, like, fancy flicks and spins and techers or whatever. Just, like, I don't know. We haven't had anyone do that in so long. It's been cool and just shows the creativity we've been missing since Bonaventura is out. But I think Paqueta's creativity is a whole nother level because it's all these fancy skill move Brazilian things that are just cool to see. So I'm happy.
Yeah, but it just shows how much we've missed Bonaventura. I was watching highlights from a few seasons ago and just watching him play, I'm like, holy shit. Like, it's bad that we depend on him that much. Because it's not like he scores a lot of goals or has a lot of assists, but his presence and his passing and his decision-making is enough to change the game.
Yeah, he's got, I think, Bonaventura, although people have disagreed about this in the past. I think Bonaventura's got a very good attacking mind. And I think that he does work perfectly as like a left centre mid when you're playing with three central midfielders and you sort of get that licence to roam a bit further forward and be a playmaker. And that is exactly what we signed with Paqueta, is a guy who's going to be a playmaker. You know, as long as we've got the other two central midfield spots as kind of anchors, obviously Kessié and Bakayoko are sort of the destroyers, if you will. They're the ones that are going to do the dirty work, and Kessié will also help bring the play forward. But Paqueta's certainly more of a luxury player, in the sense that, you know, he won't do tons of battling, but what we've seen is that he's very agile. He's got a turn of speed. He seems to have a good eye for a pass, you know.
Well, today he even did show actually pretty decent defense and winning the ball back and making a good few tackles.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, so maybe that's one of the elements of his game that's going to go under the radar a little bit. But I think that it's important that he gets these minutes early on, because that'll get him up to speed. And obviously we've got a tough schedule coming up, and you know, we're going to need as many players in and around as we can. It'll be interesting to see what we do, you know, in the next game, whether he starts again or whether he's now earned a rest. Obviously, Kessié is going to be suspended because he was sent off in the Super Cup, but we'll come on to that in a little bit. So, yeah, it's been a really, really encouraging first couple of outings for Paqueta. So, just want to see that keep going. I mean, all we've heard is like the management saying, stop comparing him to Kaká. That kind of pressure is not going to do him any good. But, you know, what are we expecting from this? What do we think his ceiling will be? Like, could he become a world-class player, a Milan legend, or, you know?
Right, and I think he does play actually pretty different from Kaká, but at the same time, like, that is the most recent comparison for us, because you look at our most recent Brazilian, and obviously he's no Luis Adriano, totally different position. At least Kaká played in the same realm of the pitch, so I understand the comparison, and it doesn't help that we created that AC Milan Brazil Twitter account and just had every Brazilian player ever comment on how he's going to be fantastic, and him even saying himself that Kaká is his idol, which is pretty cool, and I think a lot of young Brazilians from Paqueta's generation grew up with that same mindset, because Kaká was the man at the point, you know. And but as far as his own ceiling, I don't know what it is. I'm always quick to say don't hype up young kids. Like, even Cutrone after last season obviously did great, but I was like, hey, let's not get carried away here. You know, I'm always I need two consecutive good seasons before I could say someone's good. That's why I'm kind of against Piatek right now. I was always against Belotti. And Cutrone obviously is doing his second good season right now. So we'll see. Paqueta's obviously doing some slick shit, and I like it. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't have a ceiling. Yeah, that's obviously a little crazy, but I don't know what it'd be. What do you think?
I have no idea. I don't want to say, you know, Kaká is his ceiling, because Kaká was the best player in the world for a few years. You know, he was the best midfielder, you know, maybe of his generation to play. You can't put a label on that. I mean, we can all hope that he's the best player to ever play the game. Is he going to be the best player to play the game? Very unlikely. Could he be the best player on the Milan squad? That could happen, because, you know, we don't have a lot of world-class talent right now. And I think that he could be, you know, the future of our midfield. And I'm not, like, getting my hopes up like what AJ said, because, you know, there are so many one-year wonder players, and you don't want to, you know, just have these crazy expectations for such a young player, and then when he fails, you're just super disappointed. So I'm kind of going into it with an open mind. You see his highlight videos on YouTube, but there's a reason why those are highlight videos, because those are all of his good plays, not his bad plays. So we will see. I don't have any expectations.
Yeah, I'm with you too. I think it's impossible to put a ceiling on him at the moment, and it's also impossible to tell at this point in time how important he's going to be in 2 or 3 years' time. We don't really know. One thing we do know is that this guy has some serious hype behind him from Brazil. You know, you say the highlight videos are highlight videos for a reason. It's in the title, but you know, you see from those videos the kind of player that he can be when he's given the freedom mm-hmm. to operate and to do what he does. So that's exciting. And hopefully he'll get similar opportunities to play to his strengths in this team. I think this will be a very important second half of the season for him because, you know, I think if we threw him in, he'd come over at the start of the season, maybe it'd have taken him until the halfway point to acclimatise. And now he's almost got a free few months until the end of the season to just get adjusted to the level, to the intensity, to the way that Serie A plays. And that's going to be really, really important for his development. So who knows, you know, by the start of next season even, we could be looking at a player that is even better than what we've seen glimpses of so far.
Yeah, let's hope.
There's another thing about it, obviously. Don't want to overhype players, but Milan seem to do this thing where we get linked with a lot of these like bright young players from various countries. You know, we're always linked with young talent, and they're either snapped up by Real Madrid, Barcelona, you know, Premier League team. But for once, we got our man, and you know that's a big statement. We've spoken on the podcast before about how this new ownership, especially with Leonardo in as a director, seems to be geared towards recruiting young talent, and that's not necessarily young talent that costs 35 million euros. It's, you know, talent like we see players that are being signed for the Primavera that are essentially going to be there and able to make the step up to the first team if we have an injury crisis, for example. That's important as well. But it's nice to have this really, really talked about, exciting young kid. You know, some of the price tags that were being talked about for a player his age were astronomical. And we've swooped in and we've managed to get the deal done. And I think that's a massive indication of how this ownership wants to operate, as well as the bonus of us having a really talented player on our hands. So, yeah, exciting times with him. Just one thing that I want to talk about from the Sampdoria game. It seemed to me sort of the last 20 minutes of normal time we ran out of steam a little bit. And one man who was called into action quite a lot was Pepe Reina. AJ, was that definitely his best performance in a Milan shirt?
Without a doubt, it might have been his best performance in any shirt over the last 3 years, I think, three or four seasons. He's the only reason that game went to extra time, only reason we had the opportunity to win it, because Sampdoria were battering us. There was one double save that Reina made that I don't think even Donnarumma could have made. It was... maybe from the 6-yard box, I don't know who it was, but one of the Samp guys shot it. He blocked it, and he jumped, hit it, and fell back into the goal. So his entire body is inside the goal now. The ball falls back to another Samp player, point blank, who shoots it in, and Reina, by the grace of fucking God himself, hands out of the box, and just whole body is still in the box, hands out. Maybe his wrists are past the line, and he stops it. I mean, that was miraculous. So Pepe Reina gets all the praise in the world in that game.
The amazing thing about that was how he held the ball there for dramatic effect for a few seconds afterwards, as if to say, yeah, I fucking stopped it.
Yeah, and it worked. 100%. I was like, oh my God. I was there. Was yeah, I heard all kinds of special effect music in the background for that.
Matt, did you agree?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. He played amazing in that game. And AJ, it's funny that you say, like, would Donnarumma have made those saves? Because whenever we concede a goal or have an amazing save, I think, would Pepe Reina would have saved that? Or would Donnarumma have saved that, you know? And today, during the Supercopa, when Donnarumma let in that blunder of a shot, I was like, would Pepe Reina have saved that? But then earlier in the game, when Ronaldo like pelted a few shots at him, I thought, would Pepe Reina would have saved those? Like, if he would have you know? And I always think about that with the goalkeepers, because they're so different with like their positioning and their reflexes, and it's just an amazing position. I just think about it all the time, and I don't think that game would have been the same if Donnarumma was in net. I think that we would have conceded within the 90 minutes. And I definitely think that the reason that game went as long as it did was because of Pepe Reina.
Yeah, I think it was absolutely his best game in a Milan shirt. But to be fair, he didn't really have an awful lot to live up to. I think the one that sticks in the memory for us would be the Olympiacos game away from home. And that was the game that essentially cost us our spot in European competition until next season, at least. And, you know, he came into this game, I think he had a bit of a point to prove, because Donnarumma's form's been quite rightly questioned, and just made a string of amazing saves. And like you were saying, Maddie, I think so much of it is down to positioning. And, yeah, the, like you say, different goalkeepers have different strengths. I think for Donnarumma, it's probably his reflexes, and also his size is obviously a massive thing for him. He can reach the top corners. He can touch away shots that are destined for the bottom corner. You know, that kind of thing. We've seen Donnarumma make some absolutely ridiculous saves. That one against the one on Milik last season springs to mind in a good time. Yeah. So yeah. I think different goalkeepers definitely have different strengths. But one thing that cannot be undervalued as a goalkeeper is experience. And you've got to remember that Reina has been a goalkeeper at a top level for coming on 15 years now. So, you know, it may have only been a Coppa Italia round of 16 game, but he's always going to step over that white line and obviously try and stop any ball going into his net by any means. And that was one of those games when he was dialed in. Everything that was coming his way, it was like he had a force field behind him that was stopping the ball going in. And, you know, I don't know if you guys saw it, the Spurs-Man United game. De Gea was kind of similar at Wembley. It was just like, no matter what they threw at the goal, it wasn't going to go in.
Nothing was going past him. And that he played, I've never seen De Gea play so well.
Yeah, that was, he is in the conversation for the current best goalkeeper in the world, without a doubt, and everyone seems to be agreeing that that's his best ever game. So that says a lot. But yeah, superb stuff from Reina, and I'm really happy for him as well, because it's going to be useful going forward. Obviously, I'd like to see him start that Napoli game, for example, in the Coppa Italia. It's also nice to know that if Donnarumma either gets injured or needs a bit of a kick up the arse, that we've got a decent deputy to step in and do a solid job. And yeah, so we're through to the quarterfinals, so that's something to look forward to. But now I guess we better reflect on today's game. We're recording this on the Wednesday night. We've pretty much, how long ago would it be? Like 3 hours ago, we lost the Super Coppa Italiana final against Juventus in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia. It was a bit of a weird game. We mentioned it at the time, but just no atmosphere or anything. I absolutely hate the Super Coppa being played in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. And that's not a diss to the Middle East. I just think that the fans there really aren't that into it. You know what I mean?
I think they're into it. It's just the cultures are different. They're a lot like Japanese fans when it comes to sports. They're quite unrespectful of it all until something big happens, and then, you know, they cheer for that. Whereas European fans, 10 times out of 10, they're drunk and belligerent and just woo the whole time, you know. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, I also think that they're also there for the experience, because like I know when I've been to, it's not the same competition level, but when I've been to the ICC games in the United States, it's not even going to compare to a game in Italy or a game in England. Because those people are there for the experience, where if it was in Italy, those fans would be there because they're diehard, passionate fans.
Right, and that's another good point. You know, I did see quite a few people in the crowd in Jeddah wearing, like, Barcelona jerseys, Dortmund jerseys, Premier League jerseys, like, just whatever they're a fan of. They went to watch a game because it was there. It was local, you know?
Mm. Yeah, and it's a competitive game. Like,
right.
Obviously, you were saying with the ICC, Maddie, those are pre-season games that mean nothing. This was a game for a trophy.
Right.
So that's an added appeal.
Like, if the FA Cup was in Chicago, if the FA Cup final was in Chicago, I would go to it. I would wear an Everton jersey. Everton's not going to be in the FA Cup final, most likely. But I'd still be there, and I would, you know, be sitting and watching the game, cheering for good plays. I wouldn't be screaming the entire game, you know, going ham. I would just be...
I think, you know, I'm slightly bitter about the whole thing, because obviously we've played in two of the last three Super Coppas against Juventus, and the first one was in
Doha.
Was it in
Doha, Qatar?
That was it, Qatar, yeah. Wasn't it? Yeah, yeah, it was in Qatar. And then obviously this one was in Saudi Arabia, and in between we had the one that was last year. It was actually in 2017 because it was played during the summer. It was played at the start of the 2017-18 right. season. And that was between Lazio and Juve, and that was played at the Stadio Olimpico.
Right,
and that was an amazing game with like two late goals for Lazio to win it.
I think it's easier for... I think that AC Milan and Juventus are both Italian giants in the history of Italian soccer. And so putting them in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, they're going to draw more fans than Lazio Juventus will.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably enough Juventus fans in any place in the Middle East to, like, help sort of fill the stadium.
Unfortunately, but I understand there's a lot of them in the U.S. now, too.
Yeah, there is. Honestly, I did not see very many AC Milan fans there at all.
No.
Yeah.
The stadium was
Well, they have to wear white anyway, so it was easier to get a dumbass white jersey, I guess.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
But, like, it's interesting because different teams have different markets. Like, we've played in China before, and there has been tons and tons of fans wearing Milan jerseys. I think that's our market. We've got a massive following there, and we've got a huge following in Indonesia as well. So, like, you know, if we were to play the... we did play this... Didn't we play the Supercoppa against Inter in China?
I have no idea.
In, like, 2011?
Oh, I
think we did when we won 2-1 and Zlatan scored both goals.
Was that for the 2010 Super Cup or was it the 2011 Super Cup?
Let me do a quick Google.
Well, that's what I was doing.
I think that was in 2011, and I think it was for the
2010 was played at the San Siro. It was Roma and Inter. 2011. Yep.
2011 was in Beijing.
6th of August 2011 at the Beijing National Stadium. We won 2-1.
And there's 70,000 people there.
Yeah, and if I remember rightly from that game, it was like 70-80% Milan fans over Inter.
Sorry, go ahead.
Of course, yeah, of course it's a different time. We've fallen quite a bit since then.
You know, what's interesting, I wonder if we played that game at the end of the 2011 season instead of the beginning, or what it would have been like. Because wasn't that the year that Inter won the treble? Or was that... that was... Or no, 10 was. So this was, they had just won it. Wow.
No, that was the season before that. Basically, we won Serie A in 2010-11. So the 2011 Supercoppa
you're
was.
Right. And so Inter 09-10 was, Italian.
Yeah, Inter's treble was 09-10. So, yeah. It's different markets in it. I mean... I was disappointed not to see more Milan fans in the crowd, but it just, the whole thing feels so forced and so...
Yeah, it felt like an exhibition game.
It's a historic competition, like, you know, if we'd have won our 8th Supercoppa today, no matter where it was, I'd have been proud because it means we would have had the most in Italy. You know, that would have meant something, but at the same time, do I feel like gutted that we lost? Not really. It always feels a bit cheap when you qualify for it by losing a cup final as well. You know, we really, Juventus, they won the league and cup, so you could argue that there shouldn't even be a Super Cup because they won everything. But yeah, it didn't make it any less enjoyable when we beat them back in 2016. So
yeah, that was one of my highlights of being a fan this decade. You know, that's like we've won two trophies this entire decade: the Scudetto in 2011 and that in 2016, and it's cool to think that we've been in just a spiral of free fall for, what, like 6 years, and we still have more official trophies than the Liverpool this generation or something, you know?
Oh, I like that.
Same, we have more than Tottenham, too.
Yeah, and Huddersfield, we could throw them in there also, and everyone else.
Huddersfield have a league championship.
3 times in a row, we were the first team to win the... what is now in the Premier League three times in a row. So there you go. Yeah, it was just after World War One, but it still counts.
Division 1920 League. They got promoted, right? They got promoted two years ago, and they won the league that year.
Huddersfield won the league before cars were standard. Oh, my God.
Three times, though.
Doesn't count.
And then we won the FA Cup just after that as well. So we've actually got four major trophies, which actually isn't too bad.
No, it's really not, honestly.
I bet you thought we didn't have any.
Granted, the time span is pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah. We haven't been anywhere near a final. Well, we actually got to a League Cup final.
I mean, you got, as far as, you know, Premier League teams right now, in the Premier League era, you're just as successful as Liverpool.
Hmm. Yeah, he's never won a Premier League. And let's keep it that way, preferably. Yeah, so what can we take from the Supercopa game? VAR, let's start with that. I don't have any complaints about Ronaldo's goal being offside, but I've heard people saying that it was offside slightly.
It wasn't. His arm was off, and as we all know, it has to be a scoring part of your body that's offside to count as offside.
Yeah, but I mean, it's Juve, so it probably is a scoring part of his body. If he scores with his hand, they
probably allow the goal. Very good point.
I think people are just butthurt because it was a final and it was, you know, it was an amazing goal. If that was us, we'd be like, it was onsides. It was onsides. It wasn't, you know.
I disagree with that. Take it as it is. I don't think we'd be saying it was onside if we saw the replay and it wasn't. I mean, I think we're pretty quick to admit the truth. I think the reason people are upset is the inconsistency with it is because, you know, they allowed Ronaldo's goal to play all the way through, then went to VAR. With Crucione's almost goal, they instantly called it offside. Matuidi stamped on Calabria, not even a card, no review. Less than a minute later, Kessié stamps someone while not even looking at him. Complete accident, gets a yellow, reviewed red. What was the other? There was another one. There was a penalty they didn't get. Even VAR, Romagnoli said, hey, there should be a penalty. Got a fucking card for it. He's the captain. He's the only person allowed to protest to the referee. Still got a yellow. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just a lot of inconsistencies. And as soon as Luca Banti was announced as the referee, I knew someone was getting sent off for us, you know. I'm surprised it honestly wasn't Castillejo because he was playing like he wanted to hurt someone out there. And
I like that, though.
Yeah, I like it too. I'm like, hey, we don't have Suso on the bench. We don't, like, Borini's our backup. Let's chill out, man.
Why is Borini always the first sub? Why don't you put Jose More in, who the games that he's played, he has looked decent?
He can't play out wide.
Yeah, they're switching the formation when they take Paqueta off, put on Borini, because they did at the same time to bring on Higuain so we could do a two-striker, but I agree. I don't think Borini should be the first sub. I would have liked to see Paqueta stay on, and if you have to give Higuain minutes, then do a straight swap, but even that I didn't like. I didn't like that they took Cutrone off for Conte, because Conte and Cutrone...
That seemed weird.
I know it was right after Kessié was sent off, but what did the formation become at that point? Because we had Calabria and Conte on, and we still had our right wing. Yeah. It was confusing.
I don't know. It felt like we were playing Conte as almost like...
Anywhere on the pitch.
An inside winger, because if you look at the position that he took up for that ball that came across, you know, he was fouled by Emre Can and everyone was saying it should have been a penalty. Right. He was making that run to the byline. Like... You know, as a right back, I suppose you would overlap.
Yeah, the only thing I could think is, you know, in the event that Kessié was still on, it would be a 4-4-2 like we normally do, and he would be our right mid, but Castillejo would be striker then? Or I don't know who. It was weird. I think that's what it was.
It reminded me of, like, when you make multiple substitutions on FIFA at once and it messes up the order, you know, when it.
Right.
When it goes back to the thing, it's like says that you're bringing on a defender for a striker, even though that wasn't it. I think it was just the way that he chose to shuffle things around.
Maybe that's what it was. It was a 4-4-1 because we were just missing a person, you know.
I know we were down a man, but those last 5 minutes, we just didn't really threaten at all.
We did not look threatening pretty much the entire game. We had our moments. But I was pretty disappointed. We looked very, very content with parking the bus and not really creating much. Like, we did push forward, Like at the beginning of the second half, for the first like 10 or 15 minutes, we looked like we were getting in some dangerous positions. The first 5 minutes of the game, we pushed. But other than that, we just looked like we weren't trying. And then once Higuain came on, that was just icing on the cake, because you know he's not going to score, because we weren't producing anything in the box. We weren't producing chances. So,
well, and he wasn't even getting in the box. I mean, he looked like he just literally like he wanted to be elsewhere, which we all know he does at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, you would think he would want some sort of revenge against the club that really just ended his Italian footballing career, you know, threw him away. He was doing great.
But also, that's the club that's arguably giving him a lifeline by, you know, it'd be easy for Juve to turn around and say, no, look, we're not going to sell you. Just see out the season at Milan and then we'll get our money in the summer. But they've thrown him a life raft and said, look, if you want to, we'll talk about a deal with Chelsea. I mean, we might as well talk about it now. Like, what do you think has gone on? Do you think the players, do you think Higuain has said first that he wants to leave, knowing that Chelsea are interested? Or, you know, how has this breakdown happened? Because he seemed pretty happy. He had a goal drought, but then he scored that goal against Spal and he went absolutely mental, and it was as if he'd proved a point. Now things just seem to have got to the point where he wants to be anywhere but here.
I think it was created by Sky News. The dumb motherfuckers there, they took Gattuso's content or quote out of context. They started this media shitstorm. Everyone picked up on it, and it just created this thing. And so Higuain's like, fine, I want to leave then. And I seriously, because it, I haven't believed any of this up until today, honestly. Now DiMarzio's actually reporting that they have an agreement, Chelsea and Juventus, and it's really just waiting on us to get... How do I say this Polish dude's name?
Piatek.
Okay, I'll have to practice that 100 times. and, you know, Chelsea offered us Batshuayi, which I personally, I like him a lot. I know he hasn't been too hot, but I like Michi. We have the same Supreme hat, so shout out Michi.
But I'm sure he copied your style there, mate.
He did. We bought it the same day, actually, so there's that. I know.
Wow, you guys are like twins, man.
His is red, mine's blue, which is weird because he plays for Chelsea and I support Milan, but whatever.
Do you think there's a chance we get both of them?
No.
No.
Not at all.
No.
We need three strikers.
I agree, but I don't think we could afford all three of those strikers, because Higuain's cost us 17.5 million euros for the 6 months. 17.5. That's a lot. Between the loan and salary for 6 months, that's not a good one.
Yeah, that is a lot. That is a lot of money for, you know, if he'd banged in something like 15 goals in that period, you could say, okay, that's fired us into the top four.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean, value for money. If he banged in 15 goals in that period, this whole Chelsea conversation wouldn't be happening. He'd be ecstatic. Mm. He'd want to stay. There would be no... Mm. We wouldn't even know how much he cost us in 6 months. You know, he'd still be a Milan guy, and he'd be looking to solidify that over the summer, but...
Yeah, I don't think that he's unhappy at the club. I think that he has a really good relationship with Sarri, and he wants to go back to working with him. I think he was happiest when he was at Napoli. You could tell when he'd come off of the summer, and he'd be extremely fat because he was eating pizza all day. So, I don't know. I think that he enjoyed working with that manager, so I think that's the reason why he wants to go back.
Yeah, I think it's one of those grass is greener kind of things. He'll have remembered how many goals he fired in under Sarri at Napoli, which was a massive deal. Like you say, they had a good relationship there. And Higuain's never played in the Premier League, and he's always said that he wouldn't like to... he would like to try playing in England once. He'd been linked with pretty much every big team in the Premier League at some point. And this is his chance to take the leap and to play under and manage a manager that he knows and a manager that he likes and respects. I think to call his time with us a failure would be harsh, but it would also be fair to say that he hasn't lived up to expectations, obviously. And I think people will remember him because of that goal drought that he had. And I mean, Maddie, this is something that you have alluded to before. Can you draw comparisons between what's happened with Higuain and what's happened with Bonucci in terms of a player who's come in who is used to this serial winning, like winning mentality, and it just hasn't worked. It just hasn't clicked.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that, and I don't know, because is it the way that the club is ran? Is it they're used to winning? Is it the way that Gattuso is coaching the team? I think the Higuain and Bonucci situations are different. I think Bonucci was very clearly not happy here. I think Higuain is not unhappy, if that makes sense. Like, he's not the happiest he's been, but he's also not unhappy. I think it is that they're used to winning every game, dominating, and not actually fighting for moving up the table. They're used to being at the top of the table the entire season. And I think some of it is also having world-class coaching and management. I think that our coaching and team management has definitely slacked over the past, you know, 3 to 4 years. I feel like we have a new manager every 8 months almost. We tend to switch managers once a season. And then that manager lasts, you know, a full season, but kind of like two seasons, but a half of each, you know, and then they get sacked. So I think that the club is just needs some stability, and these players can see that, and they don't want to be here.
Is Gattuso the man to help bring about that stability? If I said to you now, we're going to have another 2 years of Gattuso,
I would say no. I think AJ? That... Sorry, go ahead, AJ.
The question is, would Gattuso bring stability to our management if he stays for another 2 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think he's the guy to lead us to, like, a Scudetto or anything, but as far as stability, yeah, if he gets 4 seasons with us, then obviously there's some sort of stability. Players know what they're going to get as far as the system when they come into it. They know how they're going to train. The players that are there already are going to be masters of the system. There is always something to be said about stability when a coach is there for 4 or 5 years. I mean, you look at Arsene Wenger, who was at Arsenal for 2 decades, almost 3, I believe it was. Even when they had bad seasons, you know, everyone knew what you were getting when you went to Arsenal. And I think it's credit to the stability that was there. Anytime a coach stays for a long time, you have that stability. It's the clubs like Real Madrid who tend not to have a coach for 3 years, or even Chelsea for that matter, who tend not to have a coach for 3 or 4 years. They're at a level of quality in their players to where that change of coach isn't going to affect them as much. You know, they could continue to strive under a new system right away. Whereas a club like ours, who, not saying is a small club, but has lower quality of players at the moment, we need more stability so that we could get stuck into a system. So, yeah, even if he doesn't lead us to a title or anything, I think we could steady expect to be between 3rd and 5th if Gattuso stays for an extended period of time.
Okay, yeah, so I misinterpreted that question. Will he bring stability? Yes. Is he the right man to lead the team for the next 3 seasons? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. So what would you do? Would you give him until the end of the season and then go after Conte? Or, because he's notorious for doing 2-year stints at teams. So,
yeah, I don't know who I would bring in. I would not fire Gattuso halfway through the season, because I think that's almost like a slap in the face to a manager, and Gattuso does not deserve that. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not a bad manager by any means whatsoever.
He's learning it as well.
Yeah, like, you know?
There does need to be an acknowledgement that correct. I think he's come along quite a lot since he started.
And I will be the first one to admit that when he got hired, I thought it was a terrible decision.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But he really instilled the, you know, the former AC Milan, you know, kind of mental state in these players, and they really fight. I don't think that his tactics are up to par for winning championships and for moving along in European competition. If we get to Champions League next season, we will need a different manager. I believe. I don't think that Gattuso can really shuffle players correctly between three different competitions. I think that that is one of the hardest things that he has trouble with. One of the most things he has trouble with.
I have a question.
Yeah, it's an injury. Go on.
And it's irrelevant to Gattuso. It's actually back to Higuain. So sorry to go off topic. I just looked at his numbers. We know he cost us for six months, 17 and a half million euros. He had 21 appearances, 8 goals, 2 assists. Given the prices, I mean, is that even really that bad, honestly? Like, obviously we expected more goals out of him in 21 games, but, I mean...
So it's 17 and a half million.
Yeah, that's really... I mean, if we spent 17 and a half million on a player for 8 goals in 6 months...
See, it's over 2.5 million euros per goal.
Yeah, that's not worth it whatsoever.
That is not. Yeah, I'd agree with you on that. That's a good way to put it.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. Yeah, it's interesting because I don't think that, obviously, the whole deal wasn't, it wasn't put together with the intention of him only staying for 6 months and then him being sold on by Juve. So I kind of feel for the management, Milan management anyway, in that sense, because when the details of the deal came out over the summer when he joined us, everyone said this is fantastic because it's a cheap loan considering that he's still supposedly one of the world-class centre-forwards out there. It's a cheap loan, and then we have basically the opportunity to make that permanent in the summer if he impresses. And that was just like an ideal situation for us. Of course, it wasn't part, it was done as a separate deal, but it was definitely part of the talks that saw us get Caldara in return for Bonucci as well. You know, Bonucci was unhappy and we got back a promising youngish defender. So I don't think you can actually blame the management at all for what happened over the summer. But what we've got now is yet another situation where the first 6 months hasn't worked out. Well, no, what is it? What would it be? About 4 or 5 months? It hasn't worked out. And rather than stick around and make it work, like Bonucci, he's decided it was a mistake and he wants to move on to Chelsea. But I don't have any ill feeling towards him. He's not slagged the club off or anything just yet. And I think if he went to Chelsea, he'd be wise to shut his mouth and not slag Gattuso off as well, because Gattuso will hunt him down and threaten him. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, nothing's done yet, but it's looking more and more like the next time we record this, he won't be a Milan player.
It's weird because, like you said, you don't hold any ill will. He hasn't slagged us off yet, and you're right. But for some reason, like today and a couple days ago, I started really feeling bitter towards him, and
Higuain.
I can't really place it. But yeah, like I really, I mean, if you read my ratings for him today, I was not polite. I was not nice to him. But it felt like he didn't give a single fuck to be there. He didn't want to play. Like, he was bothered to be subbed on.
I think the thing is, like, obviously it's dragged out for a while now. I think it's certainly been over a week that Chelsea have been very, very strongly linked with him. And we've not heard anything from him in the media. Nothing. It's always been Gattuso saying, look, you know, when a player wants one thing, it's difficult to persuade him. And then, out of nowhere, he posted a thing on Instagram just before the game today saying, let's do this, let's get this, like, basically, let's get this trophy. It's just like, what are you doing? Like, has your agent posted that for you? Or, like, what? You know, it just caused another unnecessary shitstorm before the game.
Why I think he's happy at the club. I don't think... Like, I think that if he were to stay, he wouldn't be disappointed. I think we would be disappointed because he's not performing. I don't think that he would be disappointed because I think he enjoys his time at the club. But I think a mix of getting the Polish kid from Genoa and then him getting the chance to reunite with Sarri and play in another league, it's just coming together to work out for both parties.
Yeah,
in a positive manner.
I think he's going to absolutely destroy the Premier League under Sarri's Chelsea right now. I really do.
I really don't see it.
I don't see it either. Premier League is such a different style of play.
You can't play the way that Higuain plays.
I think he's going to be...
And that's not...
This isn't how Higuain's played, though, in his career. It's just with us he's played like this. I think our system just doesn't suit strikers, to be honest with you. I think we're so far gone from that. We've relied on wingers for the last few seasons that we almost like, oh, there's a striker, but we ignore it. You know, our crosses go from wing to wing. Whereas Sarri's system, it's like it builds up and then ends in a striker. And I think Higuain will be in striker positions there. When you have a guy like Eden Hazard feeding you balls, Jorginho back feeding you balls, N'Golo Kante, like, I mean, Chelsea's a powerhouse. I think he's going to kill it there. He's absolutely going to kill it.
Yeah, maybe. Like you say, it makes a big difference having a world-class, an elite player like Hazard on one side, and then you've got, wait, who else did he play? Pedro or Willian on the other side, you know, it makes a massive difference. And next season, Pulisic,
so I mean, they got world-class.
That's huge, Pulisic. Yeah. Just another overhyped American player, though, him, isn't he?
Another? Who was the first one?
Freddie Adu, baby.
Freddie Adu is the ultimate. Yeah.
Actually, Tim Weah is pretty hyped up right now also, but
not is he much. Going to Celtic on loan?
What? Is he?
He went on I think he's gone on loan to Celtic, which is mental, like, playing in Scotland.
Interesting. Not sure. Yeah, I don't know
about that. Yeah, he went to...
I mean, granted, he's only, like, 17, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, boy.
I think so.
Yeah.
He's definitely a teenager. But yeah, anyway, I mean... It seems like at the moment I've just read a bunch of different reports on the Twitter feed saying that we've struck a deal with Genoa for Piatek, Krzysztof Piatek, 23-year-old Polish centre-forward. He has scored 13 league goals this season in 19 appearances, which I don't think is bad at all, personally. He's also scored 6 goals in 2 appearances in the Coppa Italia. So he's pretty hot this year. He's doing pretty well this year. He's been linked, obviously, with like Real Madrid, Dortmund, Barcelona. It's mental, the teams that he's been linked with. And I don't think any of them would actually take a punt on him at €40 million because he'd instantly be a backup. But what do you think? You know, is it worth the risk? Or could he be another Belotti or Pavoletti or whoever?
So what I'm seeing is we've offered him 4.5-year deal at €2 million a year plus bonuses, and we're looking at a loan with obligation at €40 million, but we don't know the price of the loan itself, so that could be split up into, you know, a few payments or whatever. And honestly, I've watched one Genoa game this whole season, and it was when they played us and he didn't score, so I really don't know. I watched a YouTube highlight, so I'm not going to act like I know anything about the kid. His goals don't seem to be like Cutrone's, though. That I saw people comparing them, and from what I saw, he seemed like more of a traditional striker than a poacher. So maybe they'll play well together. At least we're getting him while he's hot and not over the summer when I think he'll probably cool off. I think $40 million is a lot for him, but he only has one goal less than Cristiano Ronaldo, so that's worth something, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's as good as Cristiano Ronaldo.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
Maddie, what do you think? €40 million, a lot of money?
I think it's a lot of money for someone who's only played a half season in Serie A, but with his hype, that's what you're going to pay. And given the situation that we are in, we need a second striker if Higuain leaves. Unfortunately, hopefully it does not mean that we can't purchase Bakayoko this summer, because that would be a real shame with, you know, Bakayoko's clause and everything and our financial fair play constraints. But I mean, I'm all for it. I'm all for a young striker rather than Higuain, because, you know, if this kid pans out, it's better having a 23-year-old player than a 33-year-old player who play the same position. But like AJ said, I saw people comparing him to Cutrone, and they're both poachers, and I was like, how is this gonna work? So hopefully, you know, they can work well together. Other than that, I am all for it.
You know, so we spent 18, our loan was $18 million for Higuain with the option to buy like 35, right? So what is that? I'm not going to pretend I could do quick math. 53. That would have been a club record. Plus his wages is like $6.5-7 million, something like that, right?
Yeah. I read that it was be $111 million over the deal over his deal, and for this Polish kid, it's going to be $60 million over the life of his deal.
Okay, so, $60 million plus the $17.5 million that we've already spent on Higuain, we're at 77.
So, sorry, I confuse you. So the life of Higuain's deal with everything added up, and like over the years of his contract, it was going to add up to $111 million total. With this Polish kid, his contract fee plus his 4.5-year deal, it was going to add up to $60 million. So there is a, $51 million difference?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you didn't confuse me. That's what I was going to say. Okay. I was just adding in we've already spent on Higuain as well, the 17 and a half. So, and it's still way less than what we would have spent.
Yeah, correct. But that's already added into the 111.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well.
Still, like, still the point remains, yeah.
Yeah, that's like $51 million that we can
be spend on Bakayoko. I mean, potentially that helps us secure Bakayoko, or maybe even someone else this window if we need to, because now we have a lot of extra money lying around, supposedly.
We need to buy another winger, man.
Yeah, we need
Apparently, we're selling Çalhanoğlu as well, aren't we?
How do you guys feel about Kessie?
Selling him?
No, I don't want to sell him.
Oh, I wouldn't sell him. He's not been good though recently. Like,
I feel like with Bakayoko coming to form, Kessie has almost dropped off.
Bakayoko just looks so much bigger and more imposing on the pitch, and I never thought I'd say that because Kessie is a tank.
They're both huge, and at the beginning of the year, we were like, fuck this dude, send him back.
Yeah.
And now it's like, don't leave, play every game for us.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Gattuso, you know, I actually did kind of have a go at Gattuso for the way that he kept bashing him in public, but it actually seems to have kind of worked.
Yeah. You
know, I think he hit rock bottom when he was kind of getting booed. I want him to score
so bad. I had him on my ultimate team, and I couldn't score with him on my ultimate team. And I ended up having to sell him. But I was like, this dude cannot score.
Yeah.
He doesn't score in real life. He doesn't score in video games.
I think he'll score. He'll score at Genoa. And he'll kiss the badge or something like that. And we'll be like, yes, what a guy. What a guy. Yeah, I mean, the other possibilities that have been discussed are Mishi Batshuayi, but you know, he's only scored one league goal this season. I don't know if he struggled with injuries or what, but he'd be kind of an exciting option. But yeah, no doubt we'll see what unfolds between now and the next time we record. There may have been a couple go in, couple out. That's just the nature of January, I guess. But yeah, we'll wrap this up then, fellas. Any closing statements?
No.
Right, that's good. But that means we've covered everything. So, yes, thank you everyone for listening to this first episode of 2019. We'll hopefully be back in about a week's time, and we can discuss the Genoa game, which has been moved to a Monday afternoon, which is a real ball ache, but such is the nature of Italian football. But just before we end it here, a thank you again to our sponsors, Eurofantasy League. Make sure to check out their website, eurofantasyleague.com, to join in on all the fun. And again, check our Twitter page for more details about that. I've been Oliver Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. Been joined by Anthony Torgrud.
Yeah, sorry, totally spaced there. You can find me on Twitter at Torgrud45. That's my last name. And the number 45, like Balotelli. We've also had Madison with us.
Yeah, you guys can find me on Twitter at Madison_DT. Another great episode, and look forward to speaking with you guys next week.
Yes, and a reminder, you can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/SempreMilancom, facebook.com/SempreMilancom, youtube.com, etc. You know all that stuff anyway. Thank you very much for joining us, and we look forward to joining you again in a week's time.
La rimette dentro, esce Radu, porta vuota. Gol! Gol! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero! Li abbiamo battuti tutti, Alessio! Grande Alessio! È bella la vita! Lava quella zolla, Alessio! Lava la quella zolla, Alessio! Lava!